European News Bulletin.
Welcome back to News. I'm your host, Saeed Pourreza, in London, and we'll kick off this broadcast with news about Press TV. Without any warning or explanation, U.S. tech giant Facebook disabled Press TV's account with nearly 4 million followers for nearly 24 hours. The page was reinstated after an appeal, despite the Western media giant saying earlier its decision was final. When quizzed, Facebook declined to give any further explanation for, quote, safety and security concerns. The move comes only months after YouTube blocked Press TV's account for the sixth time on its video sharing page and on Gmail, citing violation of export rules. The Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, which runs Press TV, has called such moves clear examples of pro-U.S. interest censorship and an attack on free speech. All right, let's get more thoughts on this. Joining me now, Mohsen Abbas, a political commentator. Mohsen, good to have you with us. What do you make of it all, this move by Facebook?
Well, it's all steadily in line with what's been happening for many, many years now. What we've got is capitalist totalitarianism emerging more and more obviously. Surveillance capitalism is a term that we're all quite familiar with, which goes hand in glove with, of course, there have been mixed messages. Zuckerberg resisted for a while on Facebook. I mean, he claimed that it was not up to Facebook to police political speech, yet here he is doing exactly that. As the heat's gone up on these corporate institutions, so they are wilting and obviously working in tandem with other political interests. Let me just give you an example. Amy Palmore, the former Director General of Israel's Justice Department, was appointed on the Facebook Oversight Board. That gives you an indication of the kind of influence that Facebook, or the pressure Facebook must be under now, because she was on record chasing Facebook up to sort of ban certain free speech about Israel at that time. So likewise, American political establishment and other forces are at it. They're doing the same thing. They've done this to, of course, Press TV, but also Sputnik and Xinhua, the Chinese and Russian outlets, have been targeted as state media, you know, as if all of Western media has no partisanship with political and neoliberal ideologies. You know, over 200 pages were initially taken away from these press outlets at the time. Clearly, this is a war against the rising Eurasian, if you like, threat as they see it, and it's part of the maximum.
Let me get your view on this as well. Since it happened, a lot of reaction to the move by Facebook. One person tweeted that this move by Facebook comes ahead of a speech by the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, in which he's going to accuse Iran of links to Al-Qaeda. Do you see any relationship in all of this?
Well, absolutely. Of course, you know, the Facebook, the power of these social media outlets is immense. The algorithms are now literally at the stage where they can direct people in certain directions. You can't say anything against vaccination. You can't question things around political policies of the West. But of course, there are voices that are now really major voices speaking out against this. Let me give you the example of Tim Berners-Lee, the father of the internet, no less, who gave birth to the World Wide Net. He hates this corporate capitalism that's going on and this kind of totalitarianism on these outlets. In fact, he hates it so much, he's setting up an alternative. He's actually challenging these major corporations, and he's taking them on with an altogether new system.
And Mohsen, thanks for that example. One quick question that can be asked is, since when have giant tech companies become the arbiters of what the public is able to consume?
Well, ever since I think that they've basically set us all up for it. Of course, they needed 20 years to hoover up all the information, get us all hooked on there, get a kind of a psychological hold on people. Now the party's over. I believe that now increasingly what you're going to see is that these tech companies are going to be politically maneuvered and forced by not only the states themselves, but also the deeper state, the money mafia in the background, will actually make sure these tech giants do as they're told and work in line with the Agenda 2030, for instance, the UN has been rolling out, which is all about controlling society, managing it in the interests of the powerful elitists.
All right. Well, the page is back up, and still we'll be able to get the truth out there for people to see. Mohsen Abbas, thank you. To other news now. Across Europe, the number of COVID-19 cases and deaths are soaring. The World Health Organization had predicted the winter months were going to be tough, but with the new variants of the virus making it more transmissible and with lockdown fatigue setting in, experts are urging vigilance. Yanka Rahimi has more in this report.
The COVID-19 pandemic is taking thousands of lives every day, and families everywhere are struggling to find closure. No visitations before loved ones die, and new burial rituals are taking their toll. In parts of Greece, victims are being buried away from their loved ones in separate plots. In Italy and Germany, crematoriums are struggling to cope with the sheer number of grieving families and an overwhelming number of bodies. The dead must be handled with protective clothing and masks, and according to the head of this crematorium, the number of deaths this winter is 20 times any flu wave.
The crematorium is full, as you can see. The caskets are not only stacked one by one, but three times high. Here, in the memorial hall, there are also many deceased stored. We use all the space we have. From the quantity, you can see that there is simply an improbable mortality. Corona is real.
The World Health Organization predicted a tough winter, with the COVID-19 pandemic and flu season overlapping. But experts say this recent surge in cases and deaths is due in part to families mixing.
The number of contacts that individuals had and their families had increased significantly over the Christmas and New Year holiday. And that has had a direct impact on the exponential growth that you have seen in many countries. Some of the exponential growth we've seen in countries is almost vertical.
Several vaccines are now being administered across the globe. In Europe, rollouts got off to a shaky start, but are now picking up pace. In the UK, which was the first in the world to start inoculating the most vulnerable, 2.3 million Britons have already got the jab. But experts say it will take until autumn for everyone to get it.
This is an extremely serious moment for the country. And as good news as the vaccine is, it cannot be seen by any of us as a free pass to ignore the national guidance.
During this, the UK's third lockdown, the police are cracking down on people breaking the rules. The statistics show more people are out and about now than during the previous lockdowns, while hospitals cope with double the number of cases as the new variant of the virus blazes through the population. Yanka Rahimi, London.
In other news of the day, aid agencies in Yemen have warned that the U.S. designation of Yemen's Houthi Ansarullah movement as a foreign terrorist organization hinders their desperately needed operations in the war-torn country.
This was already the world's worst humanitarian crisis. It was already a situation where millions of people are struggling to afford food, and food rations have been halved for millions, or famine warnings have just resurfaced. So this is really a life and death matter that we're talking about.
It is more relevant to consider who kills women and children in their homes and seizes the ports and blocks food and medicine as a terrorist.
UN Secretary General's spokesperson, Stefan Dujarric, also warned of serious political and humanitarian consequences. The move bears the hallmarks of an administration keen to make an impact in its final days. It remains unclear if the incoming Biden administration will maintain this designation. Well, for more on this, Robert Carter joins me to give us some analysis of what's happening in Yemen. And Robert, you're in touch with people on the ground in Yemen. What does this 11th hour designation by the Trump administration mean, especially for the people of Yemen?
Thanks, Aid. Well, obviously, a lot of people in Yemen, particularly on the ground there, are concerned, to say the least. Obviously, as everyone knows, Yemen has been a besieged nation for well over 5 years now. The only two ways in which vitally needed food aid is able to get in and out of the country is via the capital's airport, Sana'a, which remains closed to passenger flights, or the port city of Hodeidah, both of which are besieged, both of which are administered by the Houthi Ansar Allah-led government in Sana'a. So, of course, this designation means that even any slim way in which people are able to communicate, say, with their families in Yemen, they're going to probably find it very difficult to do so. So just sending money, small amounts of money into Yemen from, say, the US or Europe could get you in big, big trouble. In fact, you could get a jail sentence for doing so, as you'd be technically sending money to a terrorist-administered zone under this new US designation. So obviously it's been highly condemned. But I think from the actual official response from the Yemeni government is that, you know, the peace process has been failing for a long, long time in Yemen. And ultimately, this is just the latest sign that peace talks might not be the way to break the siege. They might have to turn to military solutions in order to try and make that breakthrough.
So you spoke of a peace process. Does this mean that the Americans under this administration said, you know what, we've been supporting the Saudis in the war in Yemen to try and get the Houthis to their feet, probably hand them a defeat. It didn't work. Let's go ahead and designate them as an FTO, as a foreign terrorist organization.
Well, I think that the way the Yemenis see it, at least I can portray that to the best of my ability, is that the Saudis are essentially attack dogs that were given the green light to attack Yemen by Washington. They believe that this is a Washington-led war on Yemen, and they believe that Trump's administration, or his regime, rather, has basically profited from the war as much as it can. Now that the Trump's regime is on the out, they're basically trying to upset what Biden's administration could look to do as much as possible. There is rumors that Biden might look to bring about some kind of meaningful peace in Yemen, and this move by Trump and Pompeo are looking to upset that. But however, Washington Post has reported that apparently Biden's foreign policy team deeply disagree with the move to designate the Ansar Allah as a terrorist organization. So many Yemenis are hopeful that Biden will come in and simply reverse Trump's policies, but that has yet to be proven. And quite frankly, after so many years of different U.S. administrations all supporting this war against Yemen and greenlighting Saudi aggression, can we trust
Biden? And the role of the UAE, Robert, should not be forgotten. They contributed like $20 million to the Middle East Institute, you know, with people, former administration officials who direct policy changes perhaps in Washington. Pompeo, the Secretary of State, was spotted with the head of the Mossad, Yossi Cohen, in Washington as early as yesterday. Are we expecting any more Pompeo action before the Biden administration is inaugurated, in your opinion, briefly?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's not just in regards to Yemen. They've already made their move to try and get the Ansar Allah designated as a terrorist group, which is deeply damaging to the peace process there. But also we're expecting an anti-Iran speech. It's been suspected that Pompeo will try and link Iran to al-Qaeda, would you believe, despite the fact that Iran's been fighting against al-Qaeda on many fronts for many years now. So ridiculous claims of that nature will be made. Also, of course, the moves against Cuba and China are also expected and have been pushed ahead so far. So this is a rogue regime that's lashing out on its final days. And unfortunately, we're just going to have to put up with it until the oppressive regime that's gripping onto power as long as it can in the U.S. is finally ripped from the halls of the White House. But even then, I think it would be naive of us to hope too much that Biden's simply going to come in and make the world a better place. All U.S. Regimes have proven time and again that they don't tend to honor their promises very much. But let's hope that something will change for Yemen.
It's in the home stretch now, isn't it? Press TV's Robert Carter. Robert, thank you for joining us. And now let's take a look at some other stories. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shtaya has accused Israel of racism for denying Palestinians access to the coronavirus vaccine.
We condemn the racism of the occupation state, which boasts about the speed of vaccinating its citizens and neglecting the legal responsibility to provide vaccines to the people under occupation.
20% of the 9 million Israelis living in the occupied territories have gotten the jab so far. The Palestinian Authority has reached agreements with four companies to import vaccines in the next 2 months.
This is European News Bulletin broadcast by IRIB English Radio. In this program, we covered the most recent developments all over Europe. You can listen to this program on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
In this segment, B'Tselem, a human rights NGO based in Jerusalem, Al-Quds, has called Israel a non-democratic, apartheid regime advancing and perpetuating the supremacy of Jews over Palestinians. Well, let's see how that's gone down on Twitter with Rob in Lakesh. Rob, Ed, what can you add to that?
Well, this is a very interesting report. Which has been filed. B'Tselem is the number one leading human rights organization, which is based in the occupied territories, and also focusing on what Israel is doing to the Palestinians in general. In its report, it stated that Israel is pursuing policies of Jewish supremacy over the native Palestinian population, and it is very specific in that it calls out the occupation of the West Bank, in which approximately 3 million Palestinians live, the illegal besiegement of the unlivable Gaza Strip, declared unlivable by the United Nations, 2 million people living there under siege, East Jerusalem al-Quds under occupation with 350,000 Palestinians living there, and also the undermining of what are known as Arab Israeli citizens, so Palestinians with Israeli citizenship, who are treated lesser than the Jewish citizens of Israel and are discriminated against when it comes to land registration and other services inside of the country as well. So when we're looking at this report, it's a comprehensive look at what's going on. If you look on the B'Tselem website, they are very meticulous. They are by the letter of the law. They try their best to not make any mistakes legally when they are reporting on this. They report the facts on the ground and have, of course, done this for many years now. So they're a very reputable organization, and this has stoked a lot of anger from Zionists online who are against Israel being called a non-democratic apartheid regime. Also included in this report, they do state that Israel is essentially dominating all of the land between the river and the sea, and hence it is an apartheid regime because Palestinians effectively have no real autonomy. When it comes to the Gaza Strip, Hamas has its leadership there, its government there, but does not have full autonomy over that land. Israel controls it. When it comes to the West Bank as well, the Palestinian Authority has to work in the confines of what Israel dictates it must do. And also, we've just noted what happened when it came to Israel passing on vaccines to Palestinians. It has excluded 5 million Palestinians between the river and the sea from the vaccination process. And also, we know that Israel have been making strides towards annexing the land inside of the West Bank.
It's a pretty significant designation by B'Tselem, is it not, Robert? Bring us some of the online opinion on this issue.
Well, in response to a lot of the Zionist trolls, as they're called online, we've had quite a few pro-Palestinian voices come out and celebrate the fact that this has been declared. The first we have here is from a user called Julia, who says, Israel is an apartheid state, end of story, and it's not anti-Semitic to say so. It's a statement of fact of the way the Israeli regime operates across its territories and with different categories of residents. Also, we have another one here who says that Israel is the last remnant of European colonialist apartheid left to be dismantled, a dangerous racist European experiment that has badly gone wrong. Like all colonialists, they invade, occupy, or steal, and subjugate the countries they invade. The world must stop this.
The world must stop this. Robert Inlakesh with that story for us. Robert, thank you. 3 months after Russia oversaw a ceasefire between Armenia and Azerbaijan, the Russian president has met with the two countries' leaders in Moscow to negotiate the next steps in keeping the peace in Nagorno-Karabakh.
I consider today's meeting useful and of utmost importance because we have managed to reach an agreement and we have signed a joint statement on the development of the situation in the region. Today we have made specific steps on building economic ties and developing infrastructure projects.
Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan hailed the new infrastructure projects but insisted the status of Nagorno-Karabakh was yet to be determined. I could do more with 30 pounds. The words of an angry British mother criticizing inadequate free school meals for children from low-income families in this country. Ahmed Caballo joins me now with the details of that story. And Ahmed, I'm going to call it pandemic profiteering.
That's a great way of describing it. And this story has caused real angry emotional response online because many feel that once again, children, vulnerable children in British society have been let down by their ruling government. Now, parents have been sharing images on social media about the amount of food they've been allocated by a private company. Now, there's one tweet that seemed to have set it all up. We've got that tweet and we're going to go to it. And it's from Roadside Mom. Now, she says, free school meal bag for 10 days. And then she goes on to describe what she got. Two jacket potatoes, a can of beans, 8 single cheese slices, a loaf of bread, 2 carrots, 3 apples, 2 sorin malt lunchbox loaves, 3 Fubu yogurts, some pasta, and 1 tomato. And she says, issued instead of £30 vouchers. As you said, she says she could have done more. And what's angered many people is, if children are vulnerable, why not give the parents £30 vouchers that they can go into the shop and buy what they need? Why contract this out to a company? And the cost of these items that were shown in the picture has been calculated to be around £5.22.
And Ahmed, I think we all recall, sorry to interject, what happened when that was brought up. A Tory MP, a Conservative MP by the name of Ben Bradley, said in a Twitter comment he linked free school meals given to low-income families to crack dens and brothels, although he said later on that his words were taken out of context.
Yeah, this is actually a message that's been perpetuated by consecutive Conservative governments, that if anyone is poor or vulnerable in British society, then it's not the fault or responsibility of the state, but the fault and responsibility of the individual. But that's simply not the case. With the austerity measures that were introduced by the Conservative Liberal Democrat coalition in 2010, we've seen poverty, we've seen rising food banks, rising child poverty, even the UN and UNICEF have spoken out about how dire the situation has been. So it's clearly a responsibility of government policies that have been led by Conservative governments.
Now, and all of this that, Ahmed, happening amid accusations of cronyism when it came to the test and trace program and to the procurement of PPE, favorable contracts, and also the Eat Out Help Out scheme that ended up costing £22 million more than its original £500 million budget. And guess what? All they needed was around £20 million to provide free school meals to these poor children. Let's bring us some of that. I'm being told that we have time for only one tweet, but some of that Twitter tirade on this issue.
Okay, so if we've got time for one tweet, then I'm going to go to Callum. Callum says, Marcus Rashford doing amazing work calling out these free school meals fast. This company is owned by Compass Group UK, whose CEO is a massive Tory donor, go figure. Now, that hasn't been the only reaction online. Some people have reacted like the Conservative MP that you mentioned and blamed the individual parents. But overwhelmingly, many people are outraged and want more done for the vulnerable children in British society.
All right, Ahmed Caballo with that story. Ahmed, thank you as always. All right, our time is literally up. Thanks for joining us, and goodbye.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of Al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam Al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
قال الإمام الباقر عليه السلام بئس العبد عبد له طمع يقوده.
Imam al-Baqir عليه السلام stated, "How wretched the servant who is a slave of his own greed, which controls him."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. There's a very interesting conversation that we find in the historical text between Jabir bin Yazid and Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. Now, Jabir bin Yazid wasn't just an ordinary man. Rather, he was one of the faithful companions of and one of the most knowledgeable students of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. And of course, when the friendship is of a higher level, a greater standard of sublime morals and spiritual realities, then the conversation, of course, is likewise full of beautiful advices, of advice of wisdom and spiritual realities. In this conversation, we find that Imam al-Baqir says to Jabir bin Yazid that there is no desire like the competition for the ranks. Now, just to explain a little bit about what exactly is being said here, if we take this for face value, we find that in this conversation between the two, Imam al-Baqir is talking about desires
And of course, desires have a negative a connotation to them. And here, in face value, it has a negative connotation. Because you aspire, you hope and aspire to be a good person, but you desire material wealth, for example. So desire has a negative connotation. The opposite to desire would be aspirations or hopes. And so here we're talking about the negative aspect. So Imam al-Baqir is saying that desire, this selfish, self-conceited greed for something, is found in itself when one wants to compete for ranks. So there is no desire, there is no negative desire like the desire to compete for the ranks, meaning you want to compete to attain a certain position, a certain worldly status, a certain worldly power position, right? Now compare this to what truly we should be competing for. We should be competing in being the most righteous people. We should be competing in being the best of people. We should be competing with each other to help each other and to serve humanity and to be of use to Islam. And so truly, as Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam has said, there is no negative desire worse than competing for some kind of worldly rank in order to gain worldly fame. Beautiful and profound words exchanged between a student and a teacher, between Jabir bin Yazid and Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I am Atta, the host of the program Dialogue. Now, this moment, I invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ayyub Rashid. I hope you enjoy this part and stay tuned till the end of today's program.
Imam said, "Laysa bayna Allah wa bayna ahadin qaraba." There is no relationship between Allah and one of you. No one has good relationship with Allah. أَحَبُّ الْعِبَادِ إِلَى اللَّهِ وَأَكْرَمِهِمْ عَلَيْهِ أَتْقَاهُمْ لَهُ. The real, those people who are أحب العباد, they are beloved of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, are the ones who are أَكْرَمِهِمْ عَلَيْهِ وَأَتْقَاهُمْ. Those are the ones who have taqwa, and these are the ones who are honored. وَأَعْمَالَهُمْ بِطَاعَتِي. These are the ones who act according to the guidance or teachings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Then he continues, he said, "Man kana lillahi muti'an fahuwa lana wali." Anyone who obeys Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he will be our wali. Meaning, we will be his leaders. We will be the guide for him. "Wa man kana lillahi asiyan fahuwa lana adu." Anyone who goes against the commands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he does ma'asiyah, he is our enemy. Wala tanalu, wala tunalu, wala yatuna illa bil amali wal wara. He says our walaya, our leadership, our imama, our whatever you want to call it, will not be gained except by doing good deeds and to fear Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue.
Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Guantanamo prison is a lawless space not fit for human life, and it needs to be permanently shut down, says Shireen Fernandez, writer, in an article published under the heading Guantanamo Bay, a lingering symbol of U.S. injustice. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. It's been 19 years since the Guantanamo Bay detention camp was established to hold prisoners of the War on Terror. Many of us recall the images of men in orange jumpsuits, shackled and goggled as they were processed into the cages of Camp X-Ray. We learned that torture was rife as testimonies trickled out of the prison's walls. We were told that religious practices were mocked. Detainees were made to listen to heavy metal music on loop, and sexual degradation was used as a way to break prisoners until they confessed to unfounded allegations. We were shocked again when images circulated of these men being force-fed through a tube up their nose while chained to a chair. The only way to protest their unfair and illegal detention was through hunger strikes, but even that was used as a way to further punish and torture them. Over the years, however, we stopped being shocked by Guantanamo as it slowly slipped from our minds. Based in southeastern Cuba, the detention camp is within an American naval station and became central to the U.S. mission to detain and interrogate those who believed had any information on or relationship to Al-Qaeda. At its peak, more than 750 men passed through Guantanamo, the youngest being 15. The oldest, Safiola Paracha, now 73, remains incarcerated without charge. In fact, plans are being made to create a hospice for aging detainees, and there is even a burial ground for those who cannot be repatriated and end up dying in the prison. While there have been 9 deaths at Guantanamo, the on-site burial ground remains empty. While the Trump administration recently awarding a multi-million dollar contract for maintenance of the naval base until 2043, there is no sign of Guantanamo imminent closure. Meanwhile, conditions in the detention camp are deteriorating. According to a New York Times article, after the recent bout of tropical rainfall in the area, raw sweat slushed inside the cells, power flickered off and on, toilets overflowed. Such unsanitary conditions become even more alarming when we consider the potential impacts on containing the spread of a pandemic within the prison. These conditions make the prison inhospitable for human life. But that's the thing about Guantanamo prisoners. They are treated as anything but human. Some may ask how the detainees are allowed to be kept in such inadequate conditions. The answer lies in Guantanamo's legal architecture. Guantanamo is legally complicated, a lawless space defined by the absence of justice. It has been remarked that iguanas have more rights at Guantanamo than the detainees because a $10,000 fine can be incurred if they run over. Once you enter Guantanamo, there is no certainty as to when or if you will ever make it out. Those detained in the prison complex cannot access U.S. federal courts, despite being held captive by U.S. administration. Instead, they are tried through military commissions, substandard courts in which most evidence against the detainees is obtained through torture. There is a stark contrast between the realities of the detainees and the sign that hangs outside the camp, honor bound to defend freedom. As we move into 2021, what hope is there for the remaining detainees? Each change in administration in the U.S. has brought with a new agenda. While Obama promised to close Guantanamo during his first term in office, Trump vowed to keep the prison open and loaded up with some bad dots. Although that didn't happen, there are still 40 detainees stuck in legal limbo, some of whom have already been cleared for release. The soon-to-be Biden administration will have to grapple with what to do with the prison, which currently costs the U.S. $13 million per prisoner to keep open. Prior to its use during the War on Terror, Guantanamo was used as a detention center to prevent Haitian asylum seekers from fleeing to the U.S. Under the pretense of public health, the U.S. administration in 1990s indefinitely detained Haitians fleeing violence in Guantanamo. The Haitians were told they might be detained at Guantanamo Bay until a cure for HIV was found. They had committed no crime, and yet these asylum seekers were detained without charge. The legal construction of Guantanamo Bay as a lawless space means that it can readily be used to isolate those on the very margins, considered a risk by the United States. This article is a reminder of the continued injustices faced by those still detained in Guantanamo. Its continued existence indicates that the war on terror is ongoing, and that sadly some voices and experiences will remain unheard and thus easily forgotten. A vision of liberation and justice, particularly for those who have been traumatized in the prison facility, must also include calls to abolish any further form of detention on the site. Guantanamo signaled the start of a spiraling war, now global in its reach, and set the precedent for imprisoning those deemed to be a threat to national security.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, Materialistic Lifestyle. Brothers and sisters, we know that Islam is a religion that provides you with a complete code of life. Islam does not want to see you becoming all materialistic. You live in this material world, but without being materialistic. Well, when we talk about this materialistic lifestyle, these materialists, they lead unhappier lives, and they are worse to the people around them. And we will get into the reasoning of it. For now, I'm just putting forth the claims. And it seems the social media might be fueling materialistic attitudes as well. You look around, and all you see is materialism growing. We know from research that materialism tends to be associated with treating others in more competitive, manipulative, and selfish ways, as well as with being less empathetic. Materialism is associated with lower levels of well-being, less pro-social interpersonal behavior, more ecologically destructive behavior, and worse academic outcomes. It also is associated with more spending, problems, and debt. Look around in your families. Inshallah, Allah is protecting you, but look at your friends, look at your peers, look at your co-workers. How many of them are caught up in this debt cycle? They're just paying off their loans and debts, and you know, they're working day in, day out just to be able to pay off their debts. In most cases, these debts are accumulated because of their materialistic lifestyle. The decisions that they made in the past, they were wrong decisions, and now they're stuck in this materialistic cycle. Welcome back, dear listeners. Before the break, we were discussing the cycle of materialism. How do people get stuck in debts and paying off their loans and interest, and you know, they lose their sleep over it, right? Why does it happen? It happens because they make some wrong decisions at some point in time in their lives, and later on they have to pay for those wrong decisions. According to research analysis, the more highly people endorsed materialistic values, the more they experienced unpleasant emotions, depression, and anxiety. The more they reported physical health problems, such as stomach aches and headaches, and the less they experienced pleasant emotions and felt satisfied with their lives. So these things are inversely proportional. You want to live a life that is, you know, a pleasant experience for you in terms of your emotion, in terms of your satisfaction from your life, you have to shy away from materialistic lifestyle. Because what materialistic lifestyle does is it captures you, and it pretty much, you know, puts you in a position where you start hating your own life. The more that people watch television, for instance, the more materialistic their values become. And aren't we experiencing this today? You look at something on your television and then you go like, I want this. Then another thing on the television, I want this, right? They're even dictating your lifestyle. Materialism rises in individuals as social media use increases. Look, social media is also indoctrinating our next generation. That makes sense, right? Since most social media messages also contain advertising, which is how the social media companies make profit. So we are surrounded with materialism, right? This is why we see that we start to become and think materialistic as well. And this is something that becomes the focus of our lives, unfortunately. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.